Blog Talk Radio.
I'm a truth terrorist. I'm a knowledge gangster. I'm a black history hitman. I'm a lie killer, urban gorilla. I gotta be a roughneck.
Free the Black Panthers, FCBP. Stand for Free the Black Panthers. And fuck the black police. That 13th Amendment, trying to make a slave of me. You can lock my body, can't trap my mind, not forever be free. Okay, free the Black Panthers, FCBP. Stand for Free the Black Panthers, and fuck the black police. Feds infiltrated our movements for black leadership roles. But we still here, finna build here, fuck coin tail pro. Show, they got me started, lying hearted, I'm the new Mufasa. And I'm all about Umoja, first in Gruz, Usaba. Let's bring back the black families, we need our father. Single mama, son and daughter, that's root of the problem. Wise up, we wise up, unity so powerful. Black banks, black schools, black owned, black power moves. You telling lies, you think this shit gon' be televised. Black power, be scared guys, that be standing there like they paralyzed, huh? We say fuck the system, cause we above the system. We keep ARs and pistols, shotguns that's worth the crystal. But that's for self-defense, make sure we have no issues. Be sure to leave it at the door if you have it with you. This for them freedom fighters, that lost their freedom. Until they freedom, we screaming carpe diem. This for the general, King Khalid Muhammad. We gon' make your day a holiday, I fucking promise.
Free the Black Panthers, FCBP. Stand for Free the Black Panthers, and fuck the black police. That 13th Amendment, tryna make a slave of me. You can lock my body, can't trap my mind, not forever be free. Okay, Free the Black Panthers, FCBP. Stand for Free the Black Panthers, and fuck the black police. Feds infiltrated our movements for black leadership roles. But we still here, finna build here, fuck coin tail pro.
RBG, 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 RBG. My sisters, my brothers, the council, the elders, shit, that's really all I need. We suited, we booted, don't do it, you stupid, we head to the armory. Black woman and goddess, regardless, my heart just don't fuck with misogyny. Bullshit, I don't tolerate it. Melanated, so you gotta hate it. Barack fucked up another conversation. Trump finna get inaugurated, damn. Unify or die, NBPP.org.
First and foremost, the new Black Panther Party, no other Black Panther Party, we are not violent. We are for self-defense and self-determination. The most violent group in this country are the police. What is taking place by the police department to black people across this country is ethnic cleansing and genocide. It has escalated since the day that Barack Obama was inaugurated in 2008. We have a people who are only 13% of the population, yet we make up 80% of the prisons. We have 50% unemployment rate in the black community, and it's actually even more than that because they're not counting our people that are in the prison. The 13th Amendment says you cannot be made a slave or indentured servant unless you commit a crime. The 14th Amendment forced our people to be subjects of this government. We never had any say in that. We need our own nation.
In the morning and I ask myself, is life worth living, should I blast myself? I'm tired of being poor and even worse, I'm black, my stomach hurts, so I'm looking for a purse to snatch. Cops give a damn about a negro, pull a trigger, kill a nigga, he's a hero. Get it back to the kids, who the hell cares? One less hungry mouth on the welfare. First ship him, don't let him deal with brothers. Give him guns, step back, watch them kill each other. It's time to fight back, that's what Huey said. Two shots in the dark, now Huey's dead. I got love for my brother, but we can never go nowhere.
best to share with each other. We gotta start making changes. Learn to see me as a brother instead of two distant strangers. And that's how I'm supposed to be. How can it never take a brother if he's close to me? I let it go back to when we played as kids and then change. That's the way it is. Come on, come on.
That's just the way it is. Things will never be the same. That's just the way it is. Oh yeah.
Many of President Bush's critics had been waiting to hear for weeks.
On Iraq, the so-called Downing Street memo from July 2002 says intelligence and facts are being fixed around the policy of removing Saddam through military action.
The memo says that the head of British intelligence told the British government that President Bush saw a war against Saddam as inevitable and that intelligence in Washington was, quote, being fixed around the policy.
We now have the so-called smoking gun memo from British officials written in the summer of 2002 detailing the ways in which the Bush administration was planning to manipulate intelligence to create a culture of fear around weapons of mass destruction in Iraq to justify a war.
Let me now turn to our program for the future.
Economy right now, it's extremely supporting of the president and his policy.
FBI scientists have found chemical traces consistent with a bomb or a missile on a piece of wreckage. Police using clubs and tear gas against demonstrators.
So-and-so, a white fascist. Rick, they said, you're getting some of your own medicine.
Tell me about it. tell me who's got control of your mind, your worldview? Is it the news or the movie you taking your girl to? Know what I'm saying, cause Uncle Sam got a plan. If you examine what they telling us, then you will understand what they planting in the seeds of the next generation. Feeding our children miseducation. No one knows if there's UFOs or any life on Mars. What they doing when they up in the stars? Because I don't believe a word of what the president said. He's filling our heads with lies, got us hypnotized when he be speaking in cold words about crime and poverty, drugs, welfare, prisons, guns, and robbery. It really means us. There's no excuse for the slander, but what's good for the zoo is still good for the gander, see?
I don't believe Bob Marley got his hands off. 31 years ago, I would have been a panther. They killed Huey because they knew he had the answer. The people that you see in the news is propaganda. I don't wanna die by a nuclear bomb. I said we don't rush the Pentagon. Pull out guns and grab the intercom. My first words would be, I believe man made God. Out of ignorance and fear, it's God made man. And why the hell would he put us here? I thought he supposed to be the all-loving. The same God who let Hitler put the Jews in the ovens. We don't fall for the regular shit. They try to feed us all this half-ass leadership. Different position, they turn politician and shut the hell up and follow tradition. Point your TV screen, telling lies to your vision. Every channel got the brain. Watch cop shit to watch. Running up in niggas' cribs claiming that they earn shots. It's a plot. The buster, can you tell me who's greedy or? Big corporations, the pigs or the media. Sign of the time, terrorism on the rise. Commercial airplanes falling out the skies like flies. Make me wonder what secrets went down with Ron Brown. Who burned the churches to the ground with no evidence found? It's not coincidence. It's been too many steady incidents. It could have been the Klan who put that bomb at the Olympics. But it probably was the FBI. Deep at the core, cause if they make us all panic, they can start. I don't believe all Marty Johnson can't talk. 31 years ago I would have been a panther. They killed Huey cause they knew he had the answer. The views that you see in the news, propaganda. I don't believe all Marty Johnson can't talk. 31 years ago I would have been a panther. You killed Huey cause you knew he had the answer. The views that you see in the news, motherfucking propaganda.
Some other groups simply because we understand the system better than most groups understand the system. And with this realization, we attempt to form a strong political base based in the community with the only strength that we have, and that's the strength of a potentially destructive force if we don't get freedom.
My nigga, this is dedication. This is anti-hesitation. This is a real nigga celebration. It's the Don Black Declaration. 59th and 5th Ave, granny house with vanilla wafers. It's the remedy to separation. Tupac of my generation. Blue pill in the fucking matrix. Red rose in the great pavement. Young black nigga trapped and he can't change it. Know he a genius, he just can't claim it. Cause they left him no platform to explain it. frustrated, so he get faded. Like deep down inside, he know you can't fade him. How long should I stay dedicated? How long till opportunity meet preparation? I need some real nigga reparation. Oh, I run up in your bank just for recreation. Dedication, hard work, plus patience. Some more of my sacrifice, I'm done waiting. I'm done waiting, told you that I wasn't playing. Now you hear what I've been saying. Dedication. Dedication. Spent my whole life thinking out the box. Boxing homies 3-on-1, got DP, but I ain't dropped. Trip on me, here I come. Spin around the block, they broke on me. Said I ran a stop sign, but that's a lie. I spent my whole life staring at the stage, playing Sega, daddy smoking Sherm, mama playing spades, catching papers. Grandma said I get some Jordan for my grades. That's my baby, when she died, my heart broke 100 ways. I spent my whole life trying to make it, trying to chase it. The cycle of a black man divided, trying to break it. You take a lot of shit, don't cry about it, just embrace it. Minor setbacks for major comebacks, that's my favorite. My nigga L said you do it on with Nip. K-Dot, he a better grip. I said he a man first, you hear the words out his lips. About flourishing from the streets to black businesses. Level 4, y'all living, giving to false imprisonment. Listen close, my nigga, it's bigger than deuces and foes, my nigga. Since elementary, we close, my nigga, you're straight like that. I give you the game, go back to the turf and give it right back. For generations, we've been dealt bad hands with bad plans. Prove your dedication by hopping out Grand Am. I'm at the premiere, politicking with Top Nip and Snoop. Damn, clock watching the way we move. Dedication.
If it ain't congratulations,
it'll
look like hate. If it ain't
congratulations, it'll
look like what
Nip
say.
Hold up.
Blah, this ain't entertainment. It's four niggas on a slave ship. These songs just the spirituals I swam against them waves with. Ended up on shore to their amazement. I hope the example I set's not contagious. Lock us behind gates, but can't tame us. Used to be stay safe, now stay dangerous. Cause ain't no point playing defense, nigga. That's why I dove off the deep end, nigga, without a life jacket. Couple meals for the world, all my life cracking. Cook the books, bring it back, so it's no taxes. Royalties, publishing, plus our own masters. I'd be damned if I slave for some white crackers. I was mapping this out, I hit the heights backwards. Topping out the 85 and Reebok classics. Ran a couple marathons just to get established. To make it happen, you got to have dedication. Hard work, plus patience, to some more of my sacrifice. I'm done waiting, I'm done waiting. Told you that I wasn't playing. Now you hear what I've been saying. Dedication. Dedication.
Ah! Ah!
Black power, black power, black power. Rest in peace, Nipsey Hussle. Rest in peace, Tupac Shakur. You're listening to the New Black Panther Party for Self-Defense Nightly Broadcast. You are listening to one of the most informative broadcasts on the globe that is not only bringing you some of the great words from our mighty ancestors of the black nation. Also, we are hearing from some of the most powerful and most revolutionary and dedicated freedom fighters in our scholarly, scholastic world, as well as on the battlefront. You also have some of the most dedicated brothers and sisters in the New Black Panther Party that are bringing this broadcast to you on a consistent nightly basis. With that being said, we are clearly pushing the revolutionary line this month. Many across the nation are celebrating the Black Panther Party and many of its founders. We want to be sure that we give credit where credit is due. Although many people think of the Black Panther Party, they first think of Huey P. Newton and the folks out in California, but we remind everyone to be historically correct. It was Kwame Ture, Mokasa Ricks, and those freedom fighting brothers and sisters who had been a part of the student nonviolent mission during the fight for voters' rights and the fight for over Jim Crow. These brothers and sisters organized to get the rights for blacks to be able to vote in the South. And because the Democrats were, at the time, they were coined the Dixiecrats, they were very much racist, were very aggressive in the lynchings that were taking place, as well as the Republicans. So the Dixiecrats, the slash Democrats, had the donkey, the jackass, and the Republicans had the elephant. Well, because the people decided to be self-determined in Lyons County, Alabama, under the direction and organizing of Kwame Ture, at the time he was known as Stokely Carmichael, and Mokasa Ricks, I'm sorry, Willie Ricks, who is now properly known as Mokasa Ricks, they raised the mantle of the black to be the symbol. The Black Panther was first erected in Lyons County, Alabama, and it was Mokasa Ricks and Kwame Ture who gave us the phrase Black Power. There's a very powerful speech that Kwame Ture did, and he was talking about what the people need is Black Power. Kwame Ture went on to be not only a leader of the Black Panther movement, he wound up leaving the United States of America, went over to Africa to organize on the ground in Africa. And that is a very powerful legacy, as he not only went to Africa, he organized with many of the great leaders from Muammar Gaddafi, Kwame Nkrumah, Amilcar Cabral, several powerful leaders of African nations. And the brother went on to continue to come back to the U.S., bring information, and he said out of his own mouth that he had believed he had been poisoned. Unfortunately, he left the earth, transcended into the realm of the great ancestors. I did get a chance to meet the brother once, to see him at Texas Southern University, and that was part of my awakening. And my first time ever even hearing about the Black Panther Party. How about that? Kwame Ture was on campus. So like I had never heard of Malcolm X until the National Black United Front played a clip of Malcolm X going through high school and top of the class and as far as academics. But these great formations and organizations and people like the Black Panther Party, like Malcolm X, were, when I came up in school, not even made aware to us or known to us. And as we are coming into a whole new generation, we want to make sure that we keep this legacy alive and let our people know and keep the revolutionary work and make sure that these freedom fighters who paved the way remain immortal, as we never let their names die or their work die. Brother Greg, our National Minister of Culture, came up with tonight's topic, Revolutionary Immortality, Walking with Kwame Ture. We have our National Minister of Culture on the line. Brother Greg, mic check.
Black Power, I'm here.
And we also have our Houston Chairman on the line, Brother Emmanuel, Black Power.
Black Power.
All right. We back. We rocking and rolling. We have a lot of folks that are on that are listening. We want to remind you, if you're listening online, to if you want to get directly into the discussion and participate by way of a question or comment or even a dialogue, you can dial 718-664-6398. That's 718-664-6398. And get into the discussion. You will need to press 1 to be in the queue to participate. You can still kick back, sit back, and listen to tonight's program. We are going to have a brief introduction by both of our co-hosts tonight. I'm, of course, for those of you who don't know, I'm the national chair of the New Black Panther Party, Sister Crystal Muhammad. for those of you who don't know. This dialogue, this radio, this broadcast is the broadcast of the people, by the people, and for the people. So we encourage your participation in the discussion, and we appreciate those of you who are listening and are gathering this revolutionary propaganda, and not only gathering it, applying it. So we're going to have, after this intro, we're going to do a 2 quick clips totaling 30 minutes in total. One is 22 minutes and one is 8 minutes. They're all from the same lecture that Brother Kwame Ture did entitled Pigs, FBI and Organization. And so after we play this 30-minute clip following the intro of the brothers, then we're going to jump into the dialogue for tonight. And, of course, we look forward to some great commentary. So with that being said, Brother Greg, let's have you start us off, followed by Brother Emmanuel, and then we'll play this clip from Kwame Ture and jump into the discussion tonight. Brother Greg, you have the floor. Black Power.
Black Power. I actually missed the opportunity back in the early 90s when I was at Essex County College. We had a small black study group, and I was supposed to hang out with one of the brothers who happened to have, had to pick somebody up, I believe, from the airport, and I wasn't able to go with them, and lo and behold, he runs into Kwame Ture at the airport, and he made sure he let everybody know. So I wish I would have been, taking that trip with him, but he's always been someone who has inspired me in many, many, many ways. When I look at the movement, the civil rights, Black Power movement, I like to call it, with SNCC and the Southern Christian Leadership Coalition, it just reminds me and helps me to see that it's not only a lot of dedication and a lot of work, but it takes a lot of heart to be out there in the forefront the way Kwame Ture was out there. And it also helps me to always keep the parallel between those who have good intentions for us as a people tend not to go that extra step. They don't, they have a tendency of holding back. And this was a brother who said so many different quotes that inspired me. One, I'm not going to beg the white man for nothing. I'm going to take it. That was something when I heard the first time really, really just went through me. And, I wrote a small paper, at the college, about Kwame Ture, and he's always been, again, somebody who's just inspired and motivated me. We might have someone come on tonight, but definitely, he said, if not tonight, he definitely wants to come on tomorrow, which is a very, very good friend of mine. His name is Noel, and Noel actually spent quite a bit of time with Kwame when he relocated to the motherland. So he would always sit and tell me stories about, them sitting out, up late night talking and things of that nature. And it'd be great if he could, make it on the call tonight. I mean, he had a family emergency, but we have so many great people around. And Noel is someone who has been a great friend, a great brother. Someone who spends quite a bit of time throughout the year traveling back and forth to Ghana, and add icing on the cake, to be able to speak and sit down and hear stories from him about our ancestor Kwame. It's like, man, how many opportunities do you get you know, to do that or to be able to experience that. So I really, really appreciate, you know, the fact that he definitely wants to come on the show. But definitely one of my great favorite, you know, inspiring ancestors, you know, of all time, Black Power.
Oh, Black Power, brother Emmanuel.
You in honor to those who came in the great line of divine before us, those that will come after us, and most importantly, those that are here tonight. We greet you with the greeting words of peace. Assalamu alaikum. And I thank everyone that is here. Thank you, Quinn. And I thank everyone that is here on the night that has joined us over the weekend. I apologize for my absence over the weekend, but the Queen knows, the General knows what's going on, and everyone else will know in due time. But just know that there's nothing going to stop this. If you don't hear from me, it is not because I done fell off. It is something else with this system that is trying to keep us from getting what we need. But trust me, they're not going to be able to do it. So if you don't hear me one night, tune in the next. You will hear. But I'm in this for life, just like many of my real brothers and sisters. We in this for life. And there's nothing that's going to stop us from doing this, bringing this truth to y'all. So I thank you again for being here. Buckle your seatbelts, pull your pens and your pads out. Get ready. Brother Greg got some amazing information for us. We have a great clip for you, and then we will discuss more into the Willie Lynch letter later on in the program. So as I ask everybody, share this right now. Call your friends, call your family members, give them the number, tell a man, you know, just sit up with you tonight and listen to some truth. This is the Truth Hour, and we are the power. Black, one love.
We are the power. Without further ado, brothers and sisters, we bring you Kwame Ture.
A positive role in our struggle, of that there is no question. And of course, I myself would never be a Supreme Court judge, nor would never be a part of the system in any position. But I would say that at least while being inside that system there, he still kept his integrity.
I, William Jefferson Clinton, do solemnly swear.
The American capitalist system, as a backward system, has a way of presenting history as if history is made by one man. One great man, one great woman. And that this great man, this great woman comes along and directs the dumb masses who follow them for whatever reasons, and they light up the way to show the people how to go in the darkness. So whenever you study, for example, the American Revolution, you say George Washington, and that means you know everything. You say Abraham Lincoln, even in recent years of a struggle here, you could say Martin Luther King, you see. The attempt is to make it appear as if history is made indeed by these a great person. And of course, with the concession of Martin Luther King, usually our history is not made by us, but really made by one great person outside of our race, usually a great white man. Thus, in the Civil War, we did absolutely nothing. It was Abraham Lincoln. As a matter of fact, recently, some lot of garbage is written in books by people who call themselves historians, making it appear as if we have to thank Lyndon Baines Johnson for the advancement because he signed the Civil Rights Bill. Of course he signed it. But while he was signing it, we were in the streets burning the country down. You better hurry up and sign it. Burn the whole country down. Do it quick. But if you're not careful, you will thank Lyndon Baines Johnson. That's, of course, Clinton. You know, after all, born in Arkansas, people are indeed limited by their ideologies. And he is born in Arkansas, and he is raised there, you know, and we all know Arkansas. We know Arkansas very well. We know it's a racist culture to the bone. So he comes as a knight in white shining armor. He thinks that he too will come like an Abraham Lincoln and, you know, Lyndon Baines Johnson. After all, he too was from the South and and maybe in a Carter, you know. But our people cannot depend upon any one man, not even Malcolm X. Our people can depend only upon the masses of our people properly organized in a determined, uncompromising, relentless struggle against the enemy. This is the only thing that gives us victory. So in the very first instance, I have to be against all this nonsense as if Bill Clinton is going to do so much for us. One, Clinton himself makes errors, great errors, political errors. For instance, he thinks that people voted for him and not against Bush. This is a great error. This is a great error. It's a great error. I've seen it happen many, many, many times politically, that people get caught up in a certain movement and not understanding the times of the movement. If they are representing that movement, they think they are the movement. Clinton doesn't understand anything at all about history. He's going to make abominable errors. When Nixon ran again, talking about the vote of the Africans, the importance of the significance, rather, the significance of the African vote in this election, when Nixon ran against Kennedy, it was the Africans that put Kennedy into power. If you remember correctly, Martin Luther King was in prison in Alabama at that time, just before the election, and then the law came here, came this shining Kennedy, who made a telephone call into the jail to find out about Martin Luther King, and then called Mrs. Martin Luther King and Reverend Martin Luther King Sr. and told them, I've just spoken to Martin Luther King, everything is fine. And they called a press conference and said, look what Senator Kennedy has done. We encourage all Africans to vote, and everybody voted for Kennedy, all the Africans. And if you look, Kennedy didn't win by this wide margin that all these historians mystify. He won by a very slim margin against Nixon. So Nixon knew it was us, you know. But if you look at the Africans in the Democratic Party, now I'm not a Democrat. I've never voted in my life in the Democratic Party, and I never vote in the Democratic Party. It's racist and it's capitalist to the core. This is understood. And I shed my blood. I shed my blood for the vote now. I want to make that clear. Some people get confused. The vote for me has never been the road to liberation. It's only the means of organizing my people. I know that. I've seen, I was a young man in Harlem when they disbarred Adam Clayton Powell. Harlem had no representation. We continued to eat and sleep and take drugs and continue life just like always. When Julian Bond was elected, when we were young and SNCC in Atlanta, Georgia, and they refused to seat him because of his position against the war in Vietnam. The Africans in that area, his congressional district, continued life just as we've not been having any mayors, and we've been having life, and even with the mayors now, the quality of life has not improved at all. So I've known the vote is never what. You vote for once in 4 years, and that's your political responsibility? That's the height of bourgeois propaganda, making the people politically irresponsible, thinking their responsibility is limited to a one-day vote. Well, politics is every day of the, every minute. You have to be aware of what's going on, not voting on one day. So the vote has never meant anything. So I'm not a Democrat. But one thing is clear. Jesse Jackson, undeniably, has done more for the Democratic Party than any other African in this country. This is an objective fact. More than Ron Brown, certainly. More than Vernon Jordan, certainly. For the Democratic Party, I'm speaking. Because every African that Jesse registers is, by definition, an African. I understood this even in my early days for SNCC. I said, look, are we working for the Democratic Party? I said, I don't do that. Yeah, I'm a revolutionary. I can't work for the Democratic Party. But every African you registered is voting Democrat. That's the rule. So this man, Clinton, comes to power and thinks that he can decide which African he will deal with. He's going to get his own Africans. He thinks he's going to tell us which African he's going to pose upon us. I say, I'm not a member of the Democratic Party, but I know if Jesse Jackson has less power than every other African Democrat in this country, he has more influence over voting Democrats than any other African in the country. That's a fact.
We've come from this grace to amazing grace.
Number one, we must look properly at the difference between mobilizing and organizing. This becomes very, very confusing in this country, especially around the African question. Martin Luther King was a great mobilizer. He was not an organizer. He was very short on organizing. As a matter of fact, you can see this clearly. While there's no question that King was the most popular Baptist preacher in this country, he could never become head of the Baptist Convention, even though he wanted to. As a matter of fact, if you go and check history, I think it was in 1964 or 5, when he tried to become a president of the Baptist Convention, National Baptist Convention, against Jackson, Reverend Jackson, not Jesse Jackson, other Jackson, who was head of it, the tension was so high that a man was killed at that convention, thrown off the stage during the Fuhrer. Yes, it's there. These are facts. These are history. These are history, and you should do it. It's good. And the King never won it. The King was a great mobilizer. This was indeed one of the great differences between SCLC, the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, King's organization, and the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, SNCC, which I was. We were organizers. To be an organizer, you must be a mobilizer. But being a mobilizer doesn't make you an organizer. Malcolm X was a mobilizer and an organizer. Jesse Jackson came into King's movement as a mobilizer, not as an organizer. So when even if you look today, there are very few organizers out here. There are very many mobilizers. There's people can come and have an issue and mobilize the people easily. That's understandable. We are the most oppressed sector in the country. So any little thing, you know, police shoot one of us today, all right, come make some noise. It's easy to do that. But to sustain the action, to really get an armed force to protect yourself against the police, you understand, that's a different situation completely. So when we judge Jesse, we must judge him within this mobilizing aspect, but also within the character of our community. Ours is not an organized community. It is, in fact, a mobilized community. Look at what happened in Los Angeles in 1992. Well, in 1965, we did the same thing, and there's no qualitative improvement. Just quantitative. It's bigger, more damage. We've got more hatred against the enemy, but no qualitative improvement, no more organized than we were in 1965. Thus, Jesse himself, to criticize Jesse for this, is not to properly understand the political atmosphere scientifically in our community. So Jesse is just riding on mobilization. And not only that, most of the people who criticize him, they themselves don't belong to any organization. They don't even mobilize. Histories are ideologies unless we break through them, like Fidel Castro, a member of the aristocracy, breaks through it, fights for the masses, divides up his father's farm, first farm to be divided among the masses. So unless you crash through it, you're obviously a prisoner of it. And Jesse Jackson is a prisoner of his history, of a member of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, and of constantly trying to walk within the footsteps of Martin Luther King. And it's not an easy job. King himself would never have joined the Democratic Party. And publicly he's always said that. He said he always felt that somebody needed to be outside putting pressure on. Jesse thought that he can go in the inside and put pressure on in the inside, given the changing conditions since the time of King. After all, during the time of King, Africans couldn't vote in the South. If they voted, the terrorist groups would lynch them, burn their houses, etc. We know the history of America. So now the situation has changed. Africans are voting. So Jesse says, okay, the situation is not like the was with Dr. King. At Dr. King's time, he was right. But now, since they're inside, we have a pressure which we can go inside and put the pressure on. So now, whether you accept Jesse's thesis and strategy or not, at least you can see some political logics to it. Now, the role he plays in there, that's where the problem comes. He's in a new ball game, that is, a political party. He's not in the streets making demonstrations, but he brings the same street character into the political arena, the Democratic Party. So now his problem is to how to use this character to try and benefit some gains for the people. So if these gains are just for the minute, some baseball people here getting some franchise or some individual advancement as a result of mass struggle, at least he understands this from his background. That is his earlier struggle. This is the way it was. So now perhaps he's hoping to open up the arena as it goes. My major criticism against Jesse Jackson is a political criticism. I'm a revolutionary, and in a revolution there's no sentiment at all. So when people are criticized, it must be their political actions. My major criticism against him is that his lack of organizing at least the Africans inside the Democratic Party. If at least he would organize those Africans inside the Democratic Party, put his energies to it, but he refuses because of the contradictions that he has inside of there. He has less power than any of the other Africans. He has less power in the Democratic Party than David Dinkins, because David Dinkins is a mayor. He has less power even than Andrew Young inside the Democratic Party. He has no power inside the Democratic Party. He has influence among the Africans who vote there, and this influence, because he speaks for their aspirations, is what he uses as a bargaining weapon. It's the same process of the 60s. That's all I'm saying. So he has not changed his strategy, and those who are attacking him, they have not changed their strategy. So what they're attacking is the person of Jesse. So they think Jesse is playing the role incorrectly. If they were in that role, they would not do it this way. They wouldn't do it that way. But I'm condemning the whole role. That's what I'm saying. I'm saying that he must stop mobilizing and start organizing, because power is the organized masses. That's the only way you get power, not from a television camera. Some of these reform leaders think that political power grows out of a television lens camera. And the more cameras they got, the more power they get, you know. But power comes from the organized masses. Fidel Castro was a great man, and everyone in the world recognizes that. We have said of Fidel Castro, and it's true, President Sekou Touré says that at any given moment, the best traditions of any people may be represented by all of them, a majority of them, a minority of them, or one of them. And if Fidel Castro is the only human being that represents humanity at its best, humanity will never be diminished one iota. Fidel Castro is a man. a man of great stature and great comprehension, a little island like Cuba. He has himself leaped beyond this island of Cuba. He is known everywhere throughout the world, and he is respected everywhere throughout the world, except by capitalist pigs, everywhere. America has no right to talk to Cuba. Cuba can teach America so many things. America says that it's one of the richest countries in the world and even demeans Cuba because it's one of the poorest. Yet the conditions of health of a child in Cuba is better than the conditions of health of any child in America. From the child that child is born until it dies, it will have a doctor in its community that will monitor every movement it makes free of charge. Because Fidel Castro understands that the most important thing in a society is the quantity and quality of the people and their rising level of consciousness, that they have, first of all, a responsibility to other Cubans before they have a responsibility to themselves. America is the exact opposite. Doctors to Africa than America and all of Western Europe together have sent. We're not even talking about freedom fighters. When I first went to Africa in the 1960s, I was shocked. Among all the liberation movements, PAIGC and Guinea-Bissau, FRELIMO, MPLA, among all of them, I found Cuban combatants there teaching them, even sometimes fighting and dying with them. Fidel Castro, we have to respect him. We are Pan-Africanists, and Fidel Castro is a Pan-Africanist of the highest order. When Angola was bleeding and the racist pigs in South Africa invaded Angola, Fidel Castro sent the sons and daughters of Africa, sent those Cubans there whose bloodstream has Africa tied to it, to go and defend Africa. To go and defend Africa's dignity. Fidel Castro, that's why the African community here, we instinctively love him. When Fidel Castro came to America at the United Nations, he came to live at the Theresa Hotel in Harlem. No other president has ever done that. That's the honor he paid to us. And he paid us that honor because we instinctively supported him. We always instinctively support justice. And we know that Fidel Castro is undergoing a just struggle, a struggle for independence, a struggle to be not under the hegemony of American imperialism like all the other puppets in the Caribbean. When America says jump, they say how high. Fidel Castro is concerned of one thing, making sure that the national resources of his country serve the priority of the well-being of his people. Go to these other countries. They sell whatever they have. As a matter of fact, their leaders are sorry, slavery is over. Tourism is properly controlled by the Cuban Communist Party. Properly controlled. I mean, they're making experiments with it, but they themselves are in the position of controlling and has within a limited aspect because at this point it's only experiments. Of course, U.S. capitalism is hoping that through this will happen, but it's just a fight always. And you go into a ring, you fight, you're convinced you will win, the enemy is convinced they will win. We will see. But I think the attack here, the political attack, is what I want to speak of. Under this political attack, it appears that because the people in Cuba are poor and they have nothing to eat, that they'll be disgruntled. Vietnam defeated America. Defeated America. And I was in North Vietnam. I had one of the greatest honors of my life. I had lunch with Ho Chi Minh in North Vietnam when American planes were bombing North Vietnam. One of the greatest honors of my life. And the Vietnamese who fought America, they fought America, and every Vietnamese soldier had not one bowl of rice a day. That was their ration. And they whooped America. What does not having food have to do with a fight when you're down? Matter of fact, the poorer you are, the more determined you are in the struggle. So if America keeps thinking that because now the Cubans will only have one bowl of rice, the Vietnamese defeated them on one bowl of rice. The Cubans defeat them on half a bowl. Haiti is a very, 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 very important island in the Pan-African struggle. Haiti brings pride to Africans who know history. In 1803, Haiti was the most democratic country in the world. It was the only country in the world that did not allow slavery on its borders. The only country in the world in 1803. Once you properly understand this history, because you know these capitalist pigs have such a way of making appear as if we've never done anything as Africans. We don't know democracy. We don't know democracy. In 1803, Africans gave the freest world the freest nation to the entire world. The only country in the world that did not allow slavery was Haiti. And not only did not allow it, but the only country in the world that put its natural resources towards fighting against any oppression was Haiti. Simon Bolivar, who liberated South America, anyone who knows the history knows it was Haiti that gave him the money, outfitted him with ships to start the struggle. And the Haitians demanded only one thing of Bolivar. When you free Venezuela, when you free Colombia, when you free Argentina, when you free Peru, free the slaves. The only condition of which they required of Simon Bolivar. This is history. You can't hide the truth, and if you know your history, you look for history, you will find it. You can imagine the threat that history imposed, that Haiti imposed upon America since 1803. There was nothing that American imperialism, one other thing I must tell you. From this period, 1803, Haiti fought every major European power, the Americans, the French, the Spanish, the Germans, the Portuguese, all of them, trying to bring Haiti down, and not one of them could make Haiti renege on her democratic principles. On that country, there would never be on that territory a slave. Every man, every woman was free. You just make it to Haiti and you're free. No slavery. Everywhere else there was slavery. Everywhere else. In the great America, they were, let's not talk about that. So anyway, you could imagine the threat that Haiti posed. American imperialism, all of its life, had only one objective, to bring those slaves back onto the plantation. There was only one objective, bring those slaves back to the plantation. And America, France, all of them could not bring Haiti back to the plantation. Even after slavery was made illegal throughout the Western Hemisphere and was even abandoned and emancipation proclamations were read everywhere, Haiti continued to be the guiding inspiration for Africans throughout the Western Hemisphere. It was not until 1915 that American imperialism could put the heels of the Marines on Haiti, install Papa Doc, a scum of our race, one who would bow down to the wishes of imperialism and rape his people without the slightest mercy. And since then, that's where Haiti has been, and that's where it is to this day. And it's certainly not Bill Clinton who's going to liberate it, just the masses of Africans. The organization that the Honorable Marcus Garvey foresaw for us in the Universal Negro Improvement Association will be, Universal Negro Improvement Association will be a reality. If you look everywhere, you will see the conditions being stacked properly for Africans to begin organization. And if you look at our struggle, one thing about our struggle, one of its characteristics, while spontaneous, is that it spreads like wildfire. I mean, when you look at our struggle, it shocks you. You know, like a sit-in movement starts in, or even go back before that, a Montgomery bus boycott starts in 1954, right, in Alabama. Do you know within 6 months there's a nonviolent bus boycott in South Africa, Azania, led by Chief Lifuli of the African National Congress? And just to show you how fast it spreads, 3 sitting students get arrested February 1st in Greensboro, North Carolina. By the end of February, 3,000 students will be arrested. When we start something, we are so oppressed that once the light is seen, everybody reacts. Look at the independence movement in Africa. In 1957, Kwame Nkrumah led the way with the independence of Ghana. They laughed. He was different from the others. By 1960, two-thirds of Africa would be independent. It would sweep the Caribbean. Within 6 years, by 1966, practically all territories of Africans would be liberated, except the stubborn ones, like Azania, South Africa, Namibia in the past, the Portuguese ones, where they were defeated, and where they will be defeated, etc., etc. If you look at rebellions in this country, even just recently, in 1965, the first one started in Watts. By 1968, 300 cities would burn in this country under the torch of angry Africans. We have, in our character of struggle, not only is it spontaneous, but once it starts, it spreads like wildfire. And we have all the conditions and all the milieu prepared now for organization. Once we begin to organize, it will spread like wildfire. The enemy encourages that. So, for example, if we would look at the situation of Africans in America, if we don't look at the enemy, we'll say, well, look at them, you know, they're so dirty, they're on drug addicts, they're just killing each other, you know. For example, Brother Tom, you know, oh, Tom, what else is that? We're just killing each other. I said, where? He said, in Chicago. I said, where else? In Los Angeles. And where else? And in New York. I said, and where else? And in Florida. And
the world is divided into many, many different categories. But one of the categories which interests those of us who are concerned with advancing humanity the most is that between the conscious and the unconscious. This division between the conscious and the unconscious must be properly understood. The people instinctively love freedom, and they will instinctively fight for freedom. But you cannot win freedom on instincts. You can only win freedom on reason. Therefore, the unconscious are those who react on instinct. The conscious are those who react on reason. The job of the conscious is to make the unconscious conscious. Let us make a simple example. I think it was in 1992, after one more brutal beatings too many, the African population in Los Angeles, California, revolted, rose up in righteous rebellion. This was instinctively revolutionary. Instinctively in the sense that it wasn't planned. Instinctive in the sense that it was this reaction to brutality. And this instinctive revolutionary act was very costly to American capitalism. It even had to bring in the American army. Very costly. But since it was on instinct, it had no reason, nothing to direct it, it would spin itself out. Those who participated in it were largely unconscious. We must come to understand that the overwhelming majority of our people are unconscious. But just because they're unconscious, you shouldn't think they don't want freedom. As a matter of fact, sometimes the unconscious is quicker willing to give their lives in struggle than the conscious. These are simple facts. Would you imagine what it would be like when we are conscious rebellions, when we consciously organize to rebel in Los Angeles with reason? I mean, making supply lines, making sure armaments are there, having hospital aids, having fire brigades, just like they do even in Ireland. Nothing big, just a little planning. Just a little planning. This is what we want to speak to you about this evening. Making the unconscious conscious. Now we must say from the very beginning, the only, underline the word only, the only route to consciousness is through struggle. Now for example, we've shown you the unconscious struggle, those who rose up in righteous rebellion against the state police in Los Angeles. They were consciously involved in struggle. They were involved in struggle, unconscious, but involved in struggle. The conscious must understand precisely what their task is, and we've said this 2 years ago here, we repeat it. Ours is not to teach the people to be conscious, but to make them conscious of their unconscious behavior. Our task is not to teach the conscious to teach the unconscious to be conscious, but to make them conscious of their unconscious behavior. Because unconsciously, instinctively, they seek freedom. What we must do is make them conscious. Look, you want freedom anyway. Let's be serious. Let's sit down. Let's plan it. Let's wage protracted war, and let's tear down the system and walk on to liberation. It's as simple as that. This aspect of the unconscious becoming conscious is linked to mobilization and organization, something we mentioned last year. We must make clear distinctions between mobilizers and organizers. To be an organizer, you must be a mobilizer, but being a mobilizer doesn't make you an organizer. Much confusion is to be found here. Malcolm X was a great mobilizer. He was a great organizer. Martin Luther King was a great mobilizer. He was not a great organizer. These facts can be easily seen from King and Malcolm. When Malcolm went to a place, he left a mosque. When King went to demonstrations, he broke down desegregation and he moved on. As a matter of fact, King was not concerned with organization to the point that even though He was the most popular Baptist preacher in America, without the shadow of a doubt, and probably, beyond the shadow of a doubt, the most loved. He could not become president of the Baptist, National Baptist Convention. Yeah, so many of them. The National Baptist Convention. As a matter of fact, if my memory serves me correctly now, and I remember it was Muhammad Speaks that carried the article on the front page in 1964, when King tried to become president of the National Baptist Convention. There was so much confusion there that a minister was actually pushed off the stage and died in the struggle.
Yeah.
And of course, King lost. The man who won was a reactionary man by the name of Jackson. He never did nothing for the people, never cared about the people, just was a pork chop minister who used their money to put gas in his big Cadillac. But he was organized. We say that we must come to know the difference between mobilization and organization, because the enemy will use mobilization to demobilize us. Mobilization is very easy. Very, very easy. Because since we're people who are instinctively ready to respond against acts of injustice, anytime there's one little act of injustice, we can blow it up and we'll find people who come and make some mass demonstration around it. Miss Sally lost her job. Let's rally. She will get her job back. People will come and rally. So-and-so got kicked out of school because the teacher's unjust. The people will come and rally. They will come to rally at issues. And this is what mobilization does. It mobilizes people around issues. Those of us who are revolutionary are not concerned with issues. We're concerned with the system. The difference must be properly understood. Mobilization usually leads to reform action, not to revolutionary action. If we would look scientifically at the October 16th Million and More March, we would see clearly that this was a mobilized event, not an organized event. We must know clearly the difference between mobilization and organization. One of the characteristics of mobilization is that it is temporary. Organization is permanent and eternal. Clear differences must be made, because the unconscious can usually be captured easily around one issue items, around mobilization items, but it's hard to catch them around organization. But these unconscious must be brought to organization. We must transform mobilization to organization. We say the enemy will come and use mobilization to demobilize us. Many brothers and sisters who've been to the Million and More March will say to you, "I was there." "Well, what are you doing today, my sister?" "I was there. There weren't too many sisters out there, but you know, with a million brothers together, you know where I had to be. I was there." And then, of course, you find brothers, "Yeah, I was there. I was there. I helped you. What are you doing today, brother?" If we're not careful, we allow mobilization to become events. The struggle is never an event. It's a process, a continual, eternal process. We say it is our job to use mobilization to drive us to organization. You know our theme is organization. We want power. We don't want money. We don't want fame. We don't want fortune. We don't want popularity. We want power. Power. And power comes only from the organized masses. Power comes only from the organized masses.
Black power. Black power. Power comes from the organized masses. Then black power is going to come from the organizing the masses of black people. We were honored just these few moments to not only hear the words of Kwame Ture, but I hope we not only heard it, but that we internalized it. And from what we've internalized, we use it as substance to nourish and feed our spirits, our souls, and our minds. And then we move out on the information that was brought to us. And the common theme that our brother spoke of was organization. it makes me think about a couple of years ago when the NFAC hit the scene. That was indeed a great mobilization. You saw a lot of brothers and sisters with weapons and, you know, in all black, and it you know, it was very inspiring. And, you know, and as we delved and went down to meet with them in solidarity, the key thing, if you will remember, that we said that we wanted to assist with doing was helping to organize. Unfortunately, a lot of counterintelligence operatives or opportunists or Negro terror pro, who knows, situations panned out to where, you know, we were questioning the way a lot of the moves were going. And therefore, we, you know, refrained from pushing any further with any operations at that current time. You know, not taking down or talking bad in any shape, form, or fashion, but lack of organization in the mobilization, especially when you are dealing with the masses of our people and when you got guns involved, can prove to be costly. On the flip side, let's be honest, let's look at our formation, the New Black Panther Party. We have a lot of organization. We have a lot of structure. One of our tasks is to get mobilization of the masses, of our people. We got to keep it 100. But I would say that we have so many great minds within our organization. As I've listened to Kwame Ture, you know, there's been a lot of things going on behind the scenes. Since I've been in this position of chair, there's been attempt after attempt after attempt to try to get me out of position, not on the fact that I'm not organizing or mobilizing the people or working towards the causes, but on personality attacks and things of that nature. This is why people get into trying to character assassinate, character attack, going after the individual's character. And saying, you know, and it is interesting that these attacks generally take place when we are on the heels of something, dealing with the system of injustice for our people. It's interesting. The last time it was a lot of attacks coming on the outside. Outside forces. We've had attacks in many ways, but it's our structure, our organized manner, individuals who are principled and disciplined and working on this and these principles will move further. So you can have individuals that talk, but where would the organization come in? You know, you can have individuals that do this and do that, that appear to be a certain way, but we must be further and we must evolve further than things that appear good. We must institutionalize and put in place things for the long haul that the masses of our people can take on and make it theirs. These are some of the principles of organizing that we must do, and as we're organizing, we must evolve to do it into a structure, into strategies that will mobilize, and when we mobilize, the mobilization must be with the intent of organizing for the long haul. And this is not just for the New Black Panther Party, this is just for the black movement, period, across the planet. As we talk about so-called white supremacy, it is a very organized enemy that we're dealing with. We're dealing with an enemy whose system of so-called white supremacy is engraved into every aspect of operations, be it education, be it finance, be it agriculture, be it transportation, be it defense, be it its justice or so-called justice system. The root of the core, the foundation of this government and of the system of so-called global white supremacy. The core is organized around keeping the whites in the power structure of dominating the non-whites of the planet. And it is on us who are freedom fighters, who profess to be freedom fighters, revolutionaries, to be not only clear, but to be realistic. Brother Greg brought up the point last night. We're going to build on that. I would like to build on it a little bit further about having a plan, a 100-year plan, and I added on a 5-year plan, a 10-year plan. We must have benchmarks. We're not going to go blow by blow detail into detail about any of our activities, but we're giving principles in general. Why would we go blow by blow on this public airway and let our weaknesses and our strengths and our plans be made known? But I'm speaking on principle of how we must pay attention to the words that came not only from our great elder Kwame Ture, but many of our greats, but in particular, Brother Kwame was proven, Kwame Ture, to be a great organizer and mobilizer. As his organizing has affected nations, not just here in America, but in Africa, Southern and Central America. I thought it interesting that he mentioned about Cuba helping to organize the defense forces in Guinea-Bissau, the land of my ancestors. Never knew that till I heard this tonight. I never knew, I can be honest. I don't know if you all knew it, but I never knew that Haiti never had a lot of slaves and was the only liberated country when chattel slavery was the law of the land, so say, when European colonizers went all over the planet. And it's quite interesting to that fact when that was the first place that Columbus landed. He never actually made it over here to North America. We're all in a learning process, or we should be. Every day we should be evolving, telling no lies and claiming no easy victories. It is an uphill battle. Uphill battle. We're not turning cold. We're not going downward. So with that being said, Black Power salute. Rest in power. Baba Kwame Ture. I'm going to pass it to Brother Greg, followed by Brother Emmanuel, and to everyone that's listening, that's in the call queue, press 1 if you want to get into the discussion. Those of you who are listening online and want to participate in the discussion, you can dial in with your phone to 718-664-6398. That's 718-664-6398, and press 1 to get into the discussion. Brother Greg, you have the floor. Black Power.
Black Power.
Black Power.
Black Power.
There she is.
Black Power, young queen, young princess.
There she is, part of that long-term goal. I'm going to be short. I'm just going to go off a couple of things or add on to two things that you mentioned, sister. One is when you mentioned about the goals that we were, you know, we touched on last night. And if we can close our eyes and imagine going back to 1966, 65, 66, going into that year, if we could just envision and place ourselves there, what it was like when these brothers and sisters came together and we have the Black Panther Party. If we can close our eyes and go back just a couple of years prior to that, what it was like to be on the ground marching, protesting, you know, fighting for, you know, our rights. And then we fast forward to today, which isn't that long ago, actually. But if we could put ourselves in our ancestors and our elders' shoes back in 1965, back in 1966, what were their visions of the future? What were their goals? What was going through their mind in regards to the impact their movement would have on the next generation and then the generation after that? It's not that long ago. I was born in 1969, so I don't have an accurate, vivid memory of what transpired. The Newark riots took place here in 1967, 2 years before I was born. I don't know, and I can't explain the experiences of it because I wasn't here. Though I talked to many people who are still here that was here in Newark during that time. But my point is, when we talk about goals, when we talk about the vision of what we're doing, I think it's always important for us to keep that in the forefront of our mind, that we're not just doing this. It's not for us. We may not be here when a lot of things happen, when many things really take that turn, when the government, this white supremacist system worldwide really begin to tumble, we won't be here. Many of us probably won't be here. Maybe not. You know, I'll put it that way. But when we think about what our ancestors and our elders were doing, what was going through their mind, they had that vision that one day this is going to happen. One day that is going to happen. So we definitely need to understand and remember that what we're doing today needs to be impactful, it needs to be sincere, and we need to be dedicated to it because we're going to pass it on to the next generation. The second thing I just wanted to, you know, comment a little, just add a little bit to what you were sharing about, Sister Crystal, in regards to Fidel Castro. I believe there were 13, if I'm not mistaken, I'll look it up. I have a great documentary. It's about 5 hours, believe it or not, just on Fidel Castro and Cuba. And I believe it's about 13 or so revolutionary missions, I would say, for lack of better words, that Fidel and Cuba were a part of on the motherland, not only Guinea-Bissau, but the impact that they had in South Africa. Because if you remember, or if you go back and just do a little research, you know, the list, everyone, you'll notice that you're going to come up discovering a hell of a lot of pictures with Nelson Mandela and Fidel Castro. It's because of the impact that Fidel and the Cubans had there in South Africa. So throughout the entire continent, you know, of Africa, Fidel Castro was always a great, powerful freedom fighter. Always. And again, I want a lot of our listeners and a lot of us, I'm going to do it myself, you know, go back and do some more digging on just how much of an impact this man had on our motherland continent to free people, revolutionary-wise. So it's no coincidence of the relationship, the interactions with him and our ancestors and with our ancestor Kwame Ture. It's no coincidence whatsoever. Two men who really made an impact and left so much to be imitated and followed for us. Black power.
Black power. And not only that, to learn that Haiti was instrumental in not only its own liberation, but in we know many of the uprisings that took place here in the United States were based on the influence of the Haiti uprising, but to know the influence that Haiti had on destroying the system of chattel slavery in Central South America and here in the U.S. is very key, and it goes deep because it goes into what we were recently dealing with here in the party with the issue of what was going on in Haiti and what was happening with our people at the borders, and we still are on that. But there's been a lot of, there's been some things that took place, but don't worry about it, brothers and sisters. We have not turned our eyes away from what happened with our people in Haiti. We are actually still fact-finding, and we have some very, when it comes out, when we do speak out and you see what we've uncovered, you will see that, again, the same wannabe colonial forces were very much a part of what is going on, or what is going on and what's happening with our people in Haiti. So let's go ahead and bring the conversation to our brother, Brother Emmanuel. We know he's going to drop some science. He ain't been on in a couple of days, so I know he's full. Unleashed, brother. You are unleashed. Black power.
Black power. Black power. And I want to thank my comrade for bringing up this great subject and bringing to our remembrance our great generals. Our great general. And I'm glad that our general started this off by letting us know where the term black power came from. A lot of people thought that black power was something said by the original members of the Panthers or by Bobby and Huey, because that's what you heard in the history. But it goes further than that, because black power wasn't just about that. It was about complete power, as our ancestor has told us. So what we want to go and remind all of our people that are listening is that these things have been set up. These are organized separation tactics. And for those of y'all that know about a man named Willie Lynch, he gave a speech on the bank of the James River in the colony of Virginia around 1712. Willie Lynch was a British slave owner in the West Indies. He was invited to the colony of Virginia in 1712 to teach his methods to slave owners there. And that's where many people would say the term lynching comes from. And lynching is something that is done to a person where your air is restricted by a rope or any contraption, and you are hoisted or lifted up into the air until you pass away. For my brothers and sisters that just got here, that wasn't here when we were in school, that had not heard about this man or his tactics, but have heard the word lynching, I'm not going to be long, as our general says, but I am going to damn sure be strong. There were many things that he used in his presentation to these people. There were many tactics that he used. Let's make a slave, he said. The cardinal principles for making a Negro, the breaking process of the African woman, the Negro marriage unit, and controlled language. This is Willie Lynch. Greetings. I greet you here on the banks of the James River in the year of our Lord 1712. First, I shall say thank you, the gentlemen of the colony of Virginia, for bringing me here. I am here to help you solve some of your problems with slaves. Your invitation reached me on my modest plantation in the West Indies, where I have experimented with some of the newest and still the oldest methods of control of slaves. Ancient Rome would envy us if my program is implemented. As our boat sailed south on the James River, named for our illustrious king, whose version of the Bible we cherish, I saw enough to know that your problem is not unique. While Rome used cords of woods as crosses for standing human bodies along its highways in great numbers, you are here using the tree and the rope on occasions. I caught the whiff of a dead slave hanging from a tree a couple miles back. You are not only losing valuable stock by hangings, you are having uprisings. Slaves are running away. Your crops are sometimes left in the fields too long for maximum profit. You suffer occasional fires. Your animals were killed. Gentlemen, you know what your problems are? I do not need to elaborate. I am not here to enumerate your problems. I am here to introduce you to a method of solving them. In my bag here, I have a foolproof method for controlling your black slaves. I guarantee every one of you that if instilled correctly, it will control the slaves for at least 300 years. My method is simple. Any member of your family or your overseer can use it. I have outlined a number of differences among the slaves, and I take these differences and make them bigger. I use fear, distrust, and envy for control purposes. These methods have worked on my modest plantation in the West Indies, and it will work throughout the South. Take this simple little list of differences and think about them. On top of my list is age, but it's there only because it starts with an A. The second is color or shade. There is intelligence, size, sex, sizes of plantations, status on plantations, attitude of owners, whether the slave lived in the valley, on a hill, east, west, north, south, have fine hair, coarse hair, or is tall or short. Now that you have a list of differences, I shall give you an outline of action. But before that, I shall assure you that distrust is stronger than trust, and envy stronger than adulation. Respect or admiration. Again, distrust is stronger than trust, and envy stronger than adulation, respect, or admiration. The black slaves are receiving this introduction, this indoctrination, shall carry on and will become self-refueling and self-generating for hundreds of years, maybe thousands. Don't forget, you must pitch the old black male versus the young black male. The young black male against the old black male. You must use the dark-skinned slaves versus the light-skinned slaves, and the light-skinned slaves versus the dark-skinned slaves. You must use the female versus the male and the male versus the female. You must also have white servants and overseers distrust all blacks. But it is necessary that your slaves trust and depend on us. They must love, respect, and trust only us. Gentlemen, these kits are your keys to control. Use them. Have your wives and children use them. Never miss an opportunity. If used intensely for 1 year, the slaves themselves will remain perpetually distrustful. Thank you, gentlemen. Let's make a slave. It was the interest and business of slaveholders to study human nature, and the slave nature in particular, with a view to practical results. I and many of them attained astonishing proficiency in this direction. They had to deal not with earth, wood, or stone, but with men. And by every regard they had for their own safety and prosperity, they needed to know the material on which they were to work. Conscious of the injustice and wrong they were every hour perpetuating and knowing what they themselves would do. Were they the victims of such wrongs? They were constantly looking for the first signs of the dreaded retribution. They watched, therefore, with skilled and practiced eyes and learned to read with great accuracy the state of mind and heart of the slave through his sable face. Unusual sobriety, apparent abstractions, sulliness, and indifference indeed. Any move out of the common was afforded ground for suspicion and inquiry. Frederick Douglass's Let's Make a Slave is a study of the scientific process of man breaking and slave making. We need to go and get that book. I want all of y'all to go and get that book. Now, the first is controlled languages. Crossbreeding completed for further severance from the original beginning. We must completely annihilate the mother tongue of both the new nigga and the new mule and institute a new language that involves the new life's work of both. You know, language is a peculiar institution. It leads to the heart of a people. The more a foreigner knows about the language of another country, the more he is able to move through all levels of that society. Therefore, if the foreigner is an enemy of the country, to the extent that he knows the body of the language, to that extent is the country vulnerable to attack or invasion of a foreign culture. For example, if you take a slave, if you teach him all about your language, he will know all your secrets, and he is then no more a slave, for you can't fool him any longer. And being a fool is one of the basic ingredients of an incidence to the maintenance of the slavery system. For example, if you told a slave that he must perform in getting out our crops, and he knows the language well, he would know that our crops didn't mean our crops, and the slavery system would break down, for he would relate on the basis of what our crops really meant. So you have to be careful in setting up the new language, for the slaves would soon be in your house, talking to you as man to man. And that is death to our economic system. In addition, the definitions of words or terms are only a minute part of the process, that means small. Values are created and transported by communication through the body of the language. A total society has many interconnected value systems. All the values in the society have bridges of language to connect them for orderly working in that society. But for these language bridges, these many value systems would sharply clash and cause internal strife or civil war, the degree of the conflict being determined by the magnitude of the issues or relative opposing strength in whatever form. For example, if you put a slave in a hog pen and train him to live there and incorporate in him to value it as a way of life completely, the biggest problem you would have out of him is that he would worry you about provisions to keep the hog pen clean, or the same hog pen and make a slip and incorporate something in his language whereby he comes to value a house more than he does his hog pen. You got a problem. He will soon be in your house. The Negro marriage. We breed two nigger males with two nigger word females. Then we take the nigger male away from them and keep them moving and working. Say one nigger female bears a nigger female and the other bears a nigger male. Both nigger females, being without influence of the nigger male,
being without influence of the nigger male image, frozen with the independent psychology, will raise their offspring into reverse positions. The one with the female offspring will teach her to be like herself, independent and negotiable. We negotiate with her, through her, by her, negotiate her at will. Y'all know what negotiate mean in this context, in these words. Here we go. The one with the N-word, with the nigger, male offspring, she being frozen subconsciously, subconscious fear for his life, will raise him to be mentally dependent and weak, but physically strong, in other words, body over mind. Now, in a few years, when these two offsprings become fertile for early reproduction, we will mate and breed them and continue the cycle. That is good, sound, and long-range comprehensive planning. Warning, possible interloping negatives, he says. Earlier, we talked about the non-economic good of the horse and the nigger in their wild or natural state. We talked out of the principle of breaking and tying them together for orderly production. Furthermore, we talked about paying particular attention to the female savage and her offspring for orderly future planning. Then more recently, we stated that by reversing the positions of the male and the female savages, we created an orbiting cycle that turns on its own axis forever, unless a phenomenon occurred, fit and positions of the male and female savages. Unless a phenomenon occurred and reshifts and positions the male and female savages. Our experts warned us about the possibility of this phenomenon occurring. For they say that the mind has a strong drive to correct and recorrect itself over a period of time. If I can touch some substantial original historical base, and they advised us that the best way to deal with the substantial with the phenomenon is to shave off the brute's mental history and create a multiplicity of phenomena of illusions so that each illusion will twirl in its own orbit, something familiar to floating balls in a vacuum. This creation of multiplicity of phenomena of illusions entails the principle of crossbreeding the nigger and the horse, as we stated above, the purpose of which is to create a diversified division of labor, therefore creating different levels of labor and different values of illusion at each connecting level of labor, the results of which is the severance of the point.
Hold on, y'all. Hold on.
Several. All right. For those of you who
are listening, the seventh of the points of original beginnings for each sphere illusion.
Illusions. Since we feel that the subject matter may get more complicated as we proceed in laying down our economic plan concerning the purpose, reason, and effect of crossbreeding horses and niggers, we shall lay down the following definition terms for future generations. Listen to this, y'all. Now, here it is. Here it is. Watch this. Orbiting cycle means a thing turning in a given path. Axis means upon which or around which a body turns. Phenomena means something beyond ordinary conception and inspires awe and wonder. Multiplicity means a great number, means a globe. Crossbreeding a horse means taking a horse and breeding it with an ass, and you get a dumb, backward ass, long-headed mule that is not productive nor productive by itself. Crossbreeding niggas means taking so many drops of good white blood and putting them into as many nigger females as possible. varying the drops by the various tone that you want, and then letting them breed with each other until another cycle of color appears as you desire. What this means is this. Put the niggas and the horse in a breeding pot. Mix some asses and some good white blood and do what you get. And what do you get? You get a multiplicity of colors of ass backwards, unusual niggas running, tied to a backward ass, long-headed mule, the one productive of itself, the other sterile, the one constant, the other dying. We keep the N-word constant, for we may replace the mules for another tool. Both mule and nigga tied to each other, knowing where their other come from, and neither productive for itself nor without each other. But if you give them a small piece of their originality, these people have the capability and will fix themselves. That's all I'm going to give y'all right now, because I want to tingle the brain and I want some of y'all to go and find this letter and read it is in its entirety. Read the whole of the controlled language, the breaking process of the African woman, the Negro marriage unit, all these things as the general has been telling you and as the comrades have been telling you, these were systematically planned things that we are doing right now and wondering why we doing it. We think we doing it because that's just our nature. I act like this and she act like that. That's just in our nature. No, your nature is divine. Your nature is magnificent. Your nature is what taught them these same tactics they use against you. You are the brilliant one. So they had to come up with many tactics to get what they got right now going on in our generation. Us fighting each other, us saying all of these comments, yeah, nigga can't do nothing together. Niggas ain't going to do nothing together. Niggas ain't going to come together. You got a society right there, and correct me if I'm wrong, this is Georgia. These black folks put some money together and got hundreds of acres, and they're building the whole black world for themselves, them and their family, private property. And they're going to make their whole world for just them and all of the ones who decided to invest their money into it and make and go buy some of this land with these black dollars and build up your own lands where you're safe, where your kids don't got to come in contact with them. Your kids don't got to come in contact with their law enforcement system. They don't got to have go through the wrong neighborhood. This is our neighborhood. So these people are doing that. So it tells you, it shows you that exactly what Willie Lynn said would happen is happening right now. We have gotten a small piece of our originality from our great ancestors, our great thinkers, our great minds, and they have cultivated it. They have went through it, dissected it, and have given it to us in the proper manner in which it was to be given, and we are restoring ourselves. So I want you all, when you get a chance, because I could talk on this forever, I love expounding on Willie Lynch and going deep into every line of all that he was saying, because his tactic worked. It is true. You got the skinny slave against the fat slave, the light nigga against the dark nigga, the real nigga against the fake nigga, the house nigga against the field nigga. What did Jay-Z tell you? You steal niggas. He didn't care about the nigga female. You think he loves our black woman? He hates her just as much as he hates us. These were tactics that they all did implement, and they added on to those tactics. So right now, it is almost, to what we see, impossible for us to get along. And so some of us have just given up. Some of us have just quit. Well, brother, you're not quitting on me. You're not quitting on the light-skinned nigga, or the dark nigga, the tall nigga, the nigga with rank, the nigga with position, the nigga with money, the broke nigga. You ain't quitting on that, on that person. You're quitting on yourself. You're quitting on the whole of the people. And we've seen our ancestors sacrifice their individual lives, as our great professor just told us, sacrifice their own individual lives for the greater of the masses of the people. So if you won't get into this, you want to get into this, I'm going to tell you like this. You have to understand and be prepared to do something for the masses of the people. Because if you're doing something for yourself, just for yourself, it does not benefit us. There's a lot of them back in the day that ran away and got themselves out. They didn't come back for us. We are the slaves that came back for our brothers and sisters. We are the ones that got our freedom, found the path to that path of freedom, and went and brought that knowledge back to our brothers and sisters to get themselves also out. That is what you as a revolutionary are. That is what you as a freedom fighter are. That is what you as a conscious person on the planet Earth, that's what you are. You have a divine obligation to help those who had something this horrible instituted into their bodies and their minds, into their ways. So when you hear people talk about telling you, y'all just act like this, I don't get it. Tell them read Willie Lynch. Tell them go find out their history of their ancestors and the many tricks and horrible things they used, tactics devised and implemented, executed, and caused people harm for hundreds of years. Caused people, family members, to not get along. Caused people to not even know who they are for hundreds of years. Those are your ancestors' doings. And guess what? They said pass it down to the future generation. Some of them didn't even pass it down to their own generation. And so you even your ancestors did you wrong. You sitting here thinking I'm your enemy, wanting to take me out, wanting to hang me on the damn tree. But your ancestor fucked you over, taught you wrong. Everything you believed or they told you was true, you finna find out it was a fucking lie. And guess what, partners? Nothing is going to go backwards. You will not get that life back. No, America won't be fucking great again. If that's what you call great, sorry, Jack, it's over. Hang it up. Your chains and all that. Because trust me, I don't care what you say. Don't be no technical ass. Willie Lynch, this person. Don't be a technical ass. I don't give a fuck about a Willie Lynch. I don't give a fuck about the person that was breathing. I give a fuck about this piece of paper that tells me tactics that if anybody implemented can separate anybody. And I'm seeing my people doing it when we have the prescription right here. But you have to let the knowledge allow you to see what's going on. When me and a brother bump into each other, we look at each other and we say, oh, shit, you black. You good, fam. Yeah, well, other folks look at it and they like, huh? Oh, I just knew they was going to fight. He wants to drink on you. Oh, that's some nigga shit. Oh, he scuffed up your shoes. Oh, that's some nigga shit. Whoop that nigga ass. Oh, he was being distracted. He was mean mugging me. Check that nigga. Say something. He mean mugging me? What's up, bro? What's up, fam? Black, yeah, love. That's our greeting. That's our smile. It's a frown upside down, motherfucker. Yeah. That's what our frown means. That's the smile. That's how we are. Why? Because we've been programmed to be like this. And so to take this program away for the future generations, we are filtering it out right now. It's a dirty towel. And right now we're putting bleach in it and soaping it and scrubbing it up in and out of the water, in and out of the water. And we're trying to get to the desired place we want where this towel is free from all of its dirt. And now we can hang it up to dry, put it in a dryer. After that, what are we going to do? Put it out there for those that need to dry themselves to be able to use it and repeat That is your purpose. That is all of our purpose. But we have to give the truth. And that is right here in this letter, what we are doing to each other. Come, run to your brother and your sister. How many times to forgive them? Seven times seven. You asked the question on last night, Queen, when y'all were talking, you said, can a black person be a devil? Because we be saying it. We be calling people black devils. You know, I done called Cornell X a black devil. I done called a couple of them black devils. But because they demonstrate the behaviors of those who we call devils. A devil is one who devalues. You turn devil around and it's lived. It is the opposite of living. Opposite of doing something at the moment. Lived is past tense. It is no more. And so when you look at that, you say he devalues everything that has life. He devalues everything that is right. He devalues. I'm going to let y'all know something. The devil, a behavior. Let me get that understood. Ain't nobody with no poking fork and all that stuff. If we are, and this is me. This is something I done brought out to the people. Check this out. Because your preacher ain't said it yet. Now, I'm saying that to me because I know a lot of them like to fake take credit for this stuff and keep using our truths to fool the people. So don't allow them to do that. Remember, you heard this here. The devil is a behavior. If you are talking about what the Bible says or what they told us, they said that the devil and God got into it and God put the devil out of heaven. The devil at the time when he was in heaven was one of God's most, was his most beautiful angel. So he cast him down. And he's down here on the earth roaming, seeking to destroy. And everybody says, I don't want to go with the devil. I want to go with God. They run from the devil. There's Satan. Satan loose for all this shit. He's evil. But if you listen, if you read the story right, if you listen to them and how they tell you, even their bullshit will set it free, will make it right. If he was in his house, if the devil was one of God's most beautiful angels, then that means the devil was in the house with God at first. Guess what? When you are in my house, you belong to me. And guess what? I got some children that if you question me, if you don't run shit right in my house, I'm going to put you out of my house. Yeah, you can go out there in the world roam and do whatever you want. Try that bullshit out there, but you won't do it in my house. But guess what? Guess what I don't put you out of? Out of me. You still my child. You just a disobedient child. You still my creation. You're just a disobedient creation. You still my creation. You are just a questioning creation. If God is supposed to come back and defeat the devil, then the devil has no more power than God. He's not on an equal level. When God said, let us, that wasn't him. That's the father and mother. He's a creation of them. And he's trying with illusions to fool you and us into thinking he has power and that he's just as strong or not stronger than our father and mother, than us. But he is not a person. He is a behavior. And when you, who are made by the great creator, when you take on those same behaviors and characteristics which you are given the choice to, everybody on this planet, you can act good or you can act bad. Ain't none of y'all have no set way you can act. No, you get the choice. So each individual choose if they're going to be a righteous child or an unrighteous child. And the unrighteous children are cast out. And the righteous one stays in. But they are still that. They are my children. And I say that to let you know because your father has more power than him. Your father allowed him to do what he did to us. Why? Because he knew that we would come out greater. We would be at this point right now. And we would fix it so good, it can never happen again. So I say this, in my opinion, off of my studies, any of these black people out here that are doing things against the divine nature that is theirs and building people and being right by people, they are carrying on the characteristics, but that is not their true selves. And they are, as our general college said, they are products of learned behavior in a land with strange people doing strange things. The opposite of righteous. The opposite of God. The opposite of life. And they will get what they give. That is karma. So if any of y'all are distributing those behaviors, you're going to get the result back of it. And I do not feel bad for you. My wish is that you do each other right and live long, righteous lives doing each other right. But that won't happen because every person gets their choice. So if you choose to be a devil, if you choose to do the devilish things, we will treat you like we treat the devils. And we are against the devil. We are against the devilish ways. We are no longer fooled by your hue, by your shade, by your pigmentation. Because guess what? Pigmentation does not denote activity. You could be whatever pigment on this planet, and you all are going to do the same thing. You're going to piss. You're going to shit. You're going to eat. You're going to sleep. Every entity will do the same, but be different. So in knowing that, we know that they fooling themselves.
Hold on one second, buddy, man, you made me think. I want to go back to what you were just saying. It just stuck out what you was talking about, the angel being beautiful. Just because you're beautiful don't mean you're not wicked. So we be dealing with things on the surface. We be dealing with stuff on the surface. You worry about how something looks instead of how it is. You know what I'm saying? You worry about instead of how it looks instead of how it is. And that goes back to what Kwame Ture was saying. You can see a mobilization, and it may look good, but if it didn't have no organization, if it wasn't a mobilization to organize the masses, it's going to fizzle out. We just witnessed that most recently with all these different mobilizations and uprisings about the injustices, right? But you got people mad and they're walking, you know what I'm saying? But, you know, when we step in, we want to organize it. You know what I'm saying? I talked about how when the Mike Brown case jumped off, after the Trayvon Martin stuff had been popping, and Mike Brown, the enemy came in, and start telling people, throw your hands up, which is a universal sign of surrender. Hands up, don't shoot. And then you had other people just...
Won't take a lick.
And we would tell you, man, don't kick me.
I hated that shit. I hate that shit, and I still to this day hate that shit. I'm sorry, a lot of people looked at that as something we all came together on it. Like you just said, it looked it pretty, but the devil, the one who would do wrong, would go against you, was the most prettiest. So that's telling
but
you,
let me,
evil
but,
will
but I'm
come
saying,
and be
the
most
hands
prettiest.
But in the hands
no,
up,
no,
don't
no,
shoot piece.
That. No,
that's,
no,
but
no,
I'm,
no,
I'm
no.
not finished that point, though. I'm not finished the point
oh,
about
sorry.
The hands
I'm
up,
sorry.
Don't shoot. When you got the hands up, don't shoot, that is a universal sign of surrender.
Right.
That's not a resistance.
That is not us.
The resistance is the fist up. Fist up, black power, black power. No justice, no peace.
And how you do that?
Now they got them talking about hands up, don't shoot, surrender. Then they went from that
to doing
die-ins. They started just laying on the ground, not sitting in. Yeah, all of that, all of it. But That's what I'm saying. All of these images are images of submissiveness, of docile. You sitting in, looking down,
standing up,
you throwing your hands up.
The general said it. They'll come out real fast to protest to something that looks good, you know, but that ain't solved the problem. Yeah, they say hands up, don't you? They say all that. They even told us, Kaepernick said, take a knee, take a knee. My father said, I kneel before no man. Fuck up off your knees. You stand up. He gave you legs to stand. You put that fist high in the air, above the heads. You never kneel. Ain't taking no knee to shit. Do you know what a knee means? It means I quit. Knee means I'm taking a risk in the game, but I'm still on the team. I played football. I played it. I lived it. I know what the knee means. They can front and they can make it look beautiful, but I'm going to tell you something. Kaepernick had a contract the whole goddamn time. He didn't suffer none of that shit, but he made all of us get on knees, and my little brothers and sisters all over lost their goddamn scholarships, got put in jail. He ain't sent no goddamn scholarship to them. He ain't getting no bond money.
Well,
they lost everything.
I get it, but that's gonna go to a whole nother. A whole nother dynamic. We're gonna come back to that on tomorrow. We'll come back to that because he can now, brother man, you can stir it up. I told y'all he was unleashed. Let's get brother Yaya in, and we're gonna close off this call. Brother Yaya, you've got 3 minutes. Black Power.
Assalamu alaikum.
A real three minutes. Black Power. Assalamu alaikum, brother.
Can you hear me? Can you hear me, Honorable Crystal Muhammad?
Oh, yes, sir. We can hear you. We can hear you.
So it's 8:02. I don't know if my 3 minutes started. I just wanted to share my gratitude and the letter that was just read taught me everything that I was searching for. I was trying to find the roots of whom and why there was so much effort in making universals out of human expressions when it comes to detecting deception. And it appears that the first so-called Dr. Paul Ekman might have been Mr. Willie Lynch, which extended into the fields of so-called deception detection, in which have been taught to the masses that were exported. And now I think it's time that we reclaim these workflows and transform them into something beyond, because only the love and clarity and once again, the love for our family is the only way anyone is going to find the strength to do the paperwork, the so-called investigations, because it appears that we're all going to court for a decade until our children are free and we achieve liberation, Black Power. And my apologies for the extra minute.
Oh, no. You actually had a minute left, bro.
Oh.
So with that being said, we'll make sure we give you more time off tomorrow. We can't go. We're going to have to wrap it up tonight. Got some business to take care of, brothers and sisters. We love everyone that's calling. We're glad to have our brother back, Brother Emmanuel. We want to thank Brother Greg, Brother Yaya, Brother Emmanuel, all of the listeners, all of our supporters. Make sure you continue to support our broadcast and to support the New Black Panther Party. Go to www.nbpp.org. NBPP.org, Black Power.
Black Power. One love.
One love. Black Power.